You're listening to Strange Familiars. True stories of the paranormal, cryptids, hauntings, the occult, mythology, UFOs, folklore, weird and forgotten history. Please make sure to like and subscribe to Strange Familiars on iTunes, Stitcher, YouTube, or wherever you are listening. Please share the Strange Familiars page and episodes on Facebook and other social media. If you have experienced something strange, or if you know a story you would like us to cover, email strangefamiliarspodcast@gmail.com or find us on Facebook, facebook.com/strangefamiliars, and of course, strangefamiliars.com.
Welcome to Strange Familiars, and welcome back, James.
Oh, nice to be back.
Been a little while, but James is a traveling man. He's up and down from Pennsylvania to Canada and back.
Yeah, quite a bit. There's a lot of beautiful stuff to see through upstate PA and upstate New York. And well into Canada as well.
And you saw something pretty crazy, but we're going to get to that later in the episode. So let's leave everybody hanging. First, we're going to talk to Christopher. I talked to him about Swedish folklore and a really interesting encounter he had with something, and I hope I pronounce it correctly. I believe it's called a skogsra, or a woodwife, in Sweden. Very, very interesting account we have with Christopher.
Yeah, for sure.
But we will come back and we'll hear James, which may or may not relate to it. It's really interesting.
I find the correlation to be somewhat interesting, so I feel like it fits for sure.
Yeah, especially since at the time you told me this, you hadn't heard anything about Christopher's account. And I'm literally editing the episode together, and you call me up, and you're like, I saw the weirdest thing, and you're telling me about it. I'm like, whoa, that really fits well with this episode. So that was really cool. So we'll come back and we'll hear James' account of what he saw very recently, so it's very fresh in his head, so that'll be cool. First, we're going to talk to Christopher. I think everybody thought I might have murdered you and buried you in the basement, James.
Well, I've emerged from my basement like tomb.
James is undead.
No, it's lots of nice positive things happening on my end, and yeah, it's a lot of life changes and stuff over the last few months, but all of it's been for the positive.
Good.
And it's been really, really great. But I've had to put my time into a lot of rearranging schedules and figuring out what things look like now, establishing a new normal, if you will.
Sure, exactly. Yeah, and right about the time your schedule changed, my schedule changed, the kids got off of school, and things just got jumbled up. So it's just been hard for us to link up. Happy to have you back, man.
Yeah, for sure. There's definitely things to catch up on.
And that second patron show should be coming maybe next week. James and I went out to Site 7 again, and without giving too much away, it was a pretty interesting night.
It was a really, really interesting night. Even when we thought the night was sort of over or something pretty crazy had happened, which I'm excited to. About.
yeah, something presumably 100% natural, but still very rare and very, very, very interesting. I kind of teased it a little bit in the Facebook group, and everybody was guessing, like, oh, you saw a chupacabra. I was like, no, was it this? Was it, was it a goat?
I think it does count as a roadside crossing.
It does, yes, it does. But it's a very rare. But I told him, I said, no, it's a completely natural animal, but just happens to be very rare. And we'll tell everybody about it. So check that out. I think that's going to be called Return to Site 7, and that'll be the next patron episode. Like I said, I think it's coming next week if I get it edited.
Pretty exciting stuff.
And we'll have more coming up. We have a lot planned. We've got some overnight stuff planned at a couple haunted places around here that John has set up for us, so we'll do that with John. Okay, so without further ado, let's talk to Christopher about his encounter and some Swedish folklore, and we will be back to talk to James after that.
Like, you know what Vitra is?
No.
Vitra is like, it's like an invisible people that lives underground, but also like in a parallel world. Kind of like if you think like Stranger Things.
Right, yeah.
Yeah. If you go southern, the Vitra people is completely different from like the northern part of Sweden. So everything changes throughout. So it's a very broad spectrum.
Let's just start, I guess. Let's start with your experience then. And I'm not going to try to pronounce it. I'll let you pronounce it.
I will
learn the correct pronunciation from you. I guess we'll start with that. You said this was when you were 8 years old.
Yeah, when I was 8 years old at a summer camp that my grandma owned. So, yeah.
All right, so I'll just do a brief introduction and we'll get right into it.
Sure.
So we're talking with Christopher from Sweden, and he's going to tell us a lot about Swedish folklore and about one particular experience that he had when he was young. So what part of Sweden are you in?
I'm from the northern part in a city called Umeå by the east coast of Sweden.
Now, while there are cities in Sweden, there's a lot of still natural land too, yeah.
Oh, yeah, it's like forest. A lot of forest, right? If you drive, like, my city is about 100,000 people. The next city, like, the same size, you have to drive for, like, at least an hour. And it's just forest in between.
And most of the country's that way, right?
Yeah, pretty much.
The folklore in Sweden, it survived pretty well, and correct me if I'm wrong, Christianity came there a little later than the rest of Europe.
Yeah, exactly. And some of the things, like when Christianity came, a lot of the traditions still survived. Because like in Sweden, we celebrate Christmas at the 24th of December instead of the 25th, just because the 24th was a day we were celebrating already. So it wasn't like, it was like, oh, we shouldn't make them change the day, just stick to the 24th and stuff like that.
Yeah, so
yeah.
The folklore of these beings and these other peoples, elves and trolls and so forth, there's a really rich history there that's kind of stuck, survived.
Oh yeah, like, yeah, exactly, like, when I was a kid, my granddad's mother, like my great grandmother, she used to talk about like gnomes and stuff from when she was a kid, and like we shouldn't play in the barnyard because we will upset the gnomes, and if we upset the gnomes, we won't get a good harvest and stuff like that. So it's not that like long ago.
To me, that's wonderful. I think folklore is such an important part of really the human experience and the way we relate to the earth around us, that I think it's just so awesome when people have these surviving folkloric beliefs that they've inherited like that.
Yeah, yeah, of course. It's like, and I wasn't like really into it when I was younger because it kind of dorky, like, that you had that attitude, but like when I started looking into it more and more, the experience that happened to me when I was 8, that it started to connect a bit for some reason. And yeah,
well, why don't we talk about that first? We'll go from there into some of these other other beings. So just kind of lay out the landscape and what you were doing and just kind of tell the story.
Yeah, so I was about 8 years old. I think I was the summer I turned 8, or like the summer I turned 9. I was at a camp, like a summer camp for kids that was owned by my grandma. It was going to be there for a week. It's a place called Tavelsjö. it's rich with a lot of like, it's like the lake has Tavel Trace. It's Tavel Trace. It's a lake. It has its own like Nessie, like the Loch Ness monster, but the Tavelsjö beast kind of. So just that thing was pretty exciting, just to go to a place. I'm gonna camp for a week at a place where there's a sea monster. So I started hearing like a lot of things about this Tavelsjö beast and stuff. It's a guy who's walked his dog like throwing sticks in the water. And the dog ran into the water, grabbed the stick, ran back, and he threw it again. And after a couple of times, the dog didn't. It just heard a big like splash, and the dog just disappeared. So a lot of like stories like that, and people getting like have to fish with like shark lines when they fish, but they still keep getting like ripped off. And yeah, so anyway, so I thought that was pretty cool when I was like 8-9 years old. Then like one night we were gonna camp outside because we were all living in like a big house, but we had one night when we're like, okay, we're gonna go out near the lake, like down the shore, and camp out there. And of course, like campfire and stuff, people started telling ghost stories. And then they told a story about the house we were living in that was like, it's a known story about that house from like the 1800s, about like a kid or a couple who tried to get a kid, but they didn't succeed. So they took in like what's called a trollpacka. It's like a troll, not like a troll, it's like a sorceress kind of, like a woman who deals with sorcery and but also has a connection to trolls, kind of.
Okay.
So they took in her to help. And she, I don't know, I don't really remember if she gave them something or whatever. And then they got a kid, but the kid was like hideous. And they didn't want to show anyone the kid. So they just kept him in a cage in the basement. And he ate like a lot of so much. So they have to just keep feeding him. And one day he'd broken out of the cage and just ran into the forest, and no one ever saw him again. But after a couple of years, like farmers' cows started to disappear, and people said they saw something huge, like roaming around the forest and stuff. Yeah, so that's like the basis of that story. But they ended it with like, and a lot of people around here has. When they're alone, people hear someone from the forest calling your name over and over. And whatever you do, do not go into the forest, because then you will disappear. So yeah, I was 9 years old. That story was cool for me.
Yeah.
So everybody started. Everybody fell asleep, and like around, I had trouble falling asleep. I remember. And because I looked around, I was laying in my like sleeping bag, and I looked around, and everyone was sleeping. The fire had gone out, and then all of a sudden, I started hearing someone in the forest calling my name, and I just froze, and it just kept calling, over and over my name, and I was like, "What the fuck is going on? This is," I was terrified.
Just your first name.
Yeah, just my first name, just Christopher, over and over. It's because what I would had picture from the story would have been like, because it was a troll like creature that would be roaming around. I would have pictured like a brute, like robust voice, like an orc calling my name. That was how I pictured. When they told the story, but this was like a soft female voice or like a young kid like calling my name instead. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so I just lay there, I think, and it kept calling, and I don't know how long, but I just laid frozen and just tried to pretend I was asleep like everyone else until I finally fell asleep. But the voice kept calling over and over again. And the next day, I think I told one person, and he just left. So I didn't tell anyone about that until a couple of years later. But anyway, like the next day when we were going, it was like the last day of the camp. I was in the house where we were sleeping, and I kind of, you know, you get the feeling when someone's looking at you.
Sure.
Yeah. So I looked around, didn't see anyone, and I looked out the window, and like at the edge of the forest, there was this kind of like, I don't know if it was female or male, but like a young person, like 12 years old, I would think, that was just standing at the edge of the forest and just looking right at me. And the thing about, like, this camp is in the middle of the forest, so there's no houses around or anything. So it's like, and it wasn't a kid from the camp, because I would have recognized if it was a kid from the camps. And it was looking at me, and then it started waving. I didn't wave back. I just stood there because something felt wrong. And then it turned, and it kind of blended in. When it turned, it blended into the forest. Like, really weird. Not like it disappeared, just like camouflaged itself into the forest. Anyway, so I never really knew what that was until a couple of years later, when I was reading up on folklore and stuff. We get that in school. And so then I read about Skogsrå, like a wooden, like the Lady of the Forest, it's called. And the Lady of the Forest, the thing about her is that she lures people into the woods, so they get lost. You follow her, you just see her face, and she always goes backwards. So you keep following her. But when she turns around, her back is completely hollow, like a hollowed out tree. And then when she's turned around, you're in the middle of the forest and you're lost. And then you probably die there. So then when I read about that and compared that to the thing I saw there at the edge of the forest, it started to like connect when whatever I saw turned and just blended into the forest. So, yeah.
Yeah, it's so creepy.
That's what happened.
Can you describe, I mean, you said it looked like a, you know, a young female, but was she wearing clothes, or can you describe?
Oh, yeah, she was wearing, it's like 12 years. She had like a kind of like a nightgown on, but it looked like long, like straight, long blonde hair. And she looked like a pretty 12-year-old girl, kind of. But the nightgown was the only thing she had on. No shoes or whatever. She was barefoot. And, like, when she turned, from what I think is what I saw, because she blended into the forest, it's like the back was completely hollowed up. Yeah, like a hollowed up tree.
Yeah, that's an interesting way. I could see people describing an entity that way, that, you know, if it would turn around and blend in like that, like sort of it sort of becomes a tree. That's really interesting. The other things, calling the names from the forest, that is, see, it's so interesting to me how much we've lost the connections with old folklore. We get that here, and people will immediately say, you know, either ghosts or Bigfoot. And also, the idea of following something into the forest and being lost forever, that occurs with several creatures here, with Sasquatch and with what they call little people, or the little hairy dwarves we have accounts of here as well. And it's so similar. To me, that's the most fascinating thing. How often we get these connections with folklore from all over the world. And the idea that people try to separate it into different things when they may in fact be different, but they're certainly acting the same. It's incredibly fascinating.
The Skogsrå or the Wooden Lady, I read up a lot of about her, and so then I started seeing like there's like the Lady of the Lake as well, like a Sjörå, like a lake. Yeah, Lady of the Lake and Lady of the Woods, and then you have like Lady of the Mountain as well, who lives in the mountain. And it's the same thing there. They keep luring people, just like the Lady of the Lake lures like sailors and stuff, just like mermaids. So it's like the same connection there.
Right, yeah.
And so it's pretty cool.
Just to step back, the woman, the sorceress that helped the old couple.
Oh, yeah.
What was the name for her again?
Oh, Trollpacka.
Now,
like troll, I don't know what pucka, like an old troll bag lady, kind of.
So it, and I know this differs by region, but the way I understand it, troll at least used to be, like we think of, when you say the word troll here, anyone in the U.S. is going to think of like Tolkien, you know, big monstrous, you know, creatures.
Oh, yeah.
But it was sort of more of a catch-all term, the way I understand it. Again, correct me if I'm wrong.
The thing, it's like, it's divided up. Like, there's different, like, troll species, like, or races of trolls. So you have, like, the forest trolls, and you have small trolls. And then you have, like, the mountain trolls. Some of the, like, some say like some mountain trolls are an entire mountain. Like that, you shouldn't go up on that mountain because that mountain is a troll. But then you have like trolls that lives in caves in the middle of the forest, and I think you have like every kind of troll except like lake trolls. I never heard of that, but
right. I guess it's more of a general term describing supernatural or these other entities.
Oh yeah. Kind of like it's this thing about trolls is like the basic thing about trolls is like they live in the forest and they lure kids into the forest, or they go into like the village and they snatch babies and replace them with troll kids.
That's the changeling. Interesting. Do you know any lure how to tell a changeling? Was there certain ways touching them with iron or anything like that?
Oh yeah, the iron stuff. And of course, when Christianity came, people started taking that like holy water works and stuff like that. And if they have a tail, it's a troll. Like stuff like that. But that's kind of obvious, I guess.
Right. Again, just the universality of this folklore is stunning to me. Are there big hairy creatures that live in the woods? I guess those would be just typical trolls.
Around here. I guess we got a lot of like lately. It's been a lot of like Goatman reports. If you know about the Goatman.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of like people telling stories about meeting what they think is the Goatman in the forest.
In more in like modern reports, you mean?
Oh yeah, like last year and stuff like that.
Oh, that's awesome.
So I read a lot of stories about like people being followed by Goatman and people getting like they start like or someone who's trying to impersonate a person speaking, but just keep repeating what someone else have already said and try to reuse the words and stuff. Stuff like that.
So let's talk about house gnomes.
Oh, house gnomes. Those are the best. Because my great-grandma, she told me when she was a kid, they couldn't play a lot in the barn, because if they played too much in the barn, they would upset the house gnomes. And if the housemen were upset, they would, do a lot of bad things. Because if the house gnomes is happy, then you have a happy home. But if the house gnomes are angry, then they'll destroy a lot of, like, the harvest won't work, and the cows will get sick and stuff like that.
Would they do mischief in the home too, like poltergeist kind of stuff?
Oh yeah, of course. Like move things, like, because they're tiny, they can, like, run around, and they're fast too. They're super fast. And they just run around, move things, and just, like poltergeist, just do annoying stuff, kind of.
Was it common in her time to leave offerings or food?
Oh, yeah, we still kind of do that.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah, it's become like a tradition. You leave, like rice pudding or rice porridge. It used to be you left it out for the house gnomes. But when, like, Santa Claus came, he kind of took over the role. So now we put out, like, rice pudding for Santa Claus the day before Christmas.
Yeah, we here it's cookies, but...
Yeah, milk and cookies.
Same idea. That, well, yeah, it probably does just evolve right from the idea of leaving the offerings for the house spirits.
Yeah, it comes from the gnomes. And when she grew up, they did actually put out stuff for gnomes and not Santa Claus.
All right, let me see. I'm looking at your list here. Oh, yes. The nude man who lures people or lures children to the river.
Oh, yeah. Necken, he's called. That's a fascinating dude. The story is, it's like there's a guy called Necken, or an entity that plays the violin, and he always sits at the creek or the river and plays. And if you hear his melody, you can't stop listening to it. You must keep listening to the melody. And if you're caught in a melody, he will play and slowly back down the river, and you keep following, and then eventually you go down the river and you drown. The kind of an evil guy, and he also can be transformed into a white horse. That's, if you see the white horse, it's too beautiful not to try to ride the horse. But if you get up on the horse and you sit on its back, he will ride down to the lake or, like, the river, and he will drown you because you can't get off the back of the horse. But we got more like invisible people, and like the Vitra, that's like an invisible people who lives like in a parallel universe. It's underground, but it's kind of still the same. It's like a mirror world, kind of. So, like, if you go to Iceland and you drive like a straight down a straight road, they will sometimes just put like a huge turn around nothing. It's like, for some reason, it's just you have to go around something that isn't there. It's like, oh, it used to be a huge house here, but now it's gone. But that's not it, because then it's the reason why is because it says, like, this is a Vitterstråk, it's called. It's like a road for the Vitra, where when they put out the cows to, like, eat or stuff, then that place is their place, because if you disturb that place, bad things will happen.
Yeah, we talked with I had a guest on, Jerry, who talked a little bit about that. Well, besides that, they build actual houses for elves, but there was a mound, there was an airport I think they were trying to build during World War II, and the American military was very frustrated because they wouldn't build around this one mound or something until they gave the elves a chance to move, which they delayed building this airport for, you know, several weeks because I think someone said had a dream or a vision, and the elves said, please give us a chance to move before you destroy this one hill. they held up the construction of this airport for, you know, a certain amount of time, which I always love that story. But yeah,
awesome. This just popped into my head. There's a place called like Skarberget in Sweden, where a lot of vehicle accidents and stuff that's happened on that outside the Skarberget is a kind of a hill or a mountain or stuff, but they build a road there, and people started sending in letters to the ones who were going to build the road, just saying, but you can't build a road here because, like, one lady said that the trolls will be really mad if you do this. And a lot of people said that that's a Vittra road, a road for the Vittra. And after, even they still went ahead and built the road, and a lot of like accidents happen on this road, and people get sick for no reason and stuff like that.
Hmm.
Yeah, it's a road outside. It's like one of our interstate roads.
Yeah.
Called Skarberget. And just like people, like cars right outside the place, they get like car troubles, a lot of car troubles, and like, or flat tires for no reason and stuff like that.
Interestingly, now again, correct me if I'm wrong, but I have a book that's called Trolldom that sort of covers this. And again, it's the use of, you know, this the word troll, where people think.
Oh, yeah, troll. Yeah, because like a magician in Swedish, like, let's say, like Chris Angel. Yeah, you'd say he's a magician or something like that. But in translate that to Swedish, he's a trollkarl or a troll man. So the troll is kind of the magic part, but like it's a word that can be used for like doing magic. But it's also a word that is like the trolls, like you think of in like Lord of the Rings and stuff like that. You like the huge monster. That's also troll. So it's
sure.
It's kind of a double meaning. So trolldom or trolldom is like, that's pretty much just, yeah, it's magic.
Yeah, the book, it's very, very similar to the folk magic book, The Long Lost Friend we have here. I mean, some of the charms are exactly the same, but you know, it's just it's very interesting the way folklore spreads. Do you make a distinction between giants and trolls?
Oh yeah, there is like giant. I don't know, like the specific difference between like a giant is like a giant person, like a huge person. A troll is more like another kind of a creature. It's like they have, because trolls have tails, huge noses, and often hairy, but giants are more, yeah, like a person, but a giant in giant form. I think that like trolls, they're more common than giants. I know that the giants I've heard of is often in like the they live up in the mountains. Bergsjätte, it's called. So it's like, but in some, in for some people they say like, no, it's from in different areas. It's like one town will say it's a giant that lives there, and a town or a village a bit north of that town will say no, it's a troll, but it's a mountain troll. So it's, but it's, I think, most commonly, it's trolls, and in some parts, they're giants. Overall, I would say trolls.
Do you know any graveyard lore?
That's more like ghost stuff, mm-hmm. I guess. I know there's a grave. I don't know if it was like a killer or something, a murderer who was, that no one liked, who was buried there like in the mid-1800s. For some reason, it keeps getting fresh flowers, and no one knows why. But it's just like you can be there, and it's like there's no flower. You take the flower if there's fresh flowers at the grave. You take the flowers, and then you just walk 100 yards, turn around, there will be new flowers on the grave. And stuff like that.
That's creepy, though.
Yeah. I have a friend who's from that, because that's, I think, in Småland, in the southern part of Sweden. And she's from there, and she's said that she's seen the... She went there, and when they came, there were no fresh flowers. And they're like, oh, what a disappointment. And then they just... they walked around the graveyard, and when on their way back, there were fresh flowers at the grave. So that then they were really creeped out.
Yeah, that's a creepy one. Is there anything we didn't talk about that you want to cover?
I have a tiny ghost story as well that happened. Not huge, but a minor one.
Well, I mean, you want to tell that now? I'd love to hear.
Oh, yeah, I can say. Yeah, so, yeah, because this was like, when I was about 15 years old, me and my friend, his name is also Christopher, for some reason, like, I'm from a small village in Holmsund, and everyone who's born the same year I was born was named Christopher for some reason. Like, there's like 15 Christophers at one school, and it's like a school of 400. So, yeah, anyway, so... Yeah, so me and him, we were so into, like, ghost stories. We were, like, reading about haunted places around where we lived and stuff. And a girl who was in the same year as us, but in another class, she's like, oh, my house is haunted. And we're like, oh, that's cool. We have to go there. And she told us, because it's never been haunted until they started renovating. And they took down a wall, and they saw that inside the wall, it was like paintings of like dead flowers. And they was like, this is weird. Why would you stuff like dead flower paintings inside a wall? But anyway, they took down the wall, and they just, I think they gave the paintings to secondhand or something. But after that, stuff started happening, and like poltergeist activities, things moved around, and cupboards started banging and stuff like that. My friend told me she woke up one night, and the door to her closet opened, and out came like three girls that was like 6 years old, like dancing, and they just danced around in her room. And she freaked out. I was like, okay, because I believe in stuff like this, but I want to experience this before I can fully believe. So we started hanging out in her house and stuff like that. And we were like, I think, or like from 5 or 8 kids or teenagers, just hanging out like every day, every weekend and stuff like that. And often, more than often, we would scare each other, like someone thought they heard something and got frightened, then everyone gets frightened, like,
sure, yeah,
mass. But anyway, then there was like one night I had been sitting on the upper floor of the house. They had the computer up there. It was like the time you had a stationary computer, no Wi-Fi and stuff, and I forgot something. I don't remember what, but I forgot something at the computer, and everyone was downstairs, and I was like, okay, I have to go upstairs, and it's dark. For some reason, I was like, I was so scared, and I thought that if I bring a pair of scissors, then I might be fine. So I started walking up the stairs, and of course, everyone was following me, because they were scared as well, and they wanted to see what would happen when I got up. Anyway, so when I got, like, so I was eye level with the floor on the top floor, I just saw a pair of feet, and I got so scared, because no one was supposed to be up on the second floor. So I ran down, and I just threw the scissor away, and we ran outside, and everyone was like, what did you see? What happened? And then I was like, oh, I'm so stupid, because then my mind started to like connect, and I understood what I've seen, and what I've seen was like my friend's dad's shoes he had standing up the when you come up, and then everyone laughed and told me I was stupid, and then we went back inside, and that's when I got scared for real, because when I came down the stairs, when I was running, I threw the scissors to my left down the, there's a small hallway, and at the end of the hallway, there's the laundry room, and I threw the scissors down the hallway to my left into the laundry room. Then I turned right, so I came in the kitchen, and you go through the kitchen, then outside to the porch, and that's so. But anyway, when we went back in, we opened the door, went towards the kitchen, and then in the middle of the kitchen, there's a chair standing in the middle of the kitchen, and the scissor was laying on the chair.
Oh,
I have no explanation for that, and it still gives me chills.
Yeah, that's that's an odd question, but it just occurred to me. Did you ever retrieve whatever it was that you left by the computer?
Oh yeah. Not the same night though.
Yeah, that's what I figured. I would have given that a little while probably myself.
Yeah, I think it was like I've downloaded songs and I put them on burnt them to a CD. I think it was that the thing I forgot though. Yeah, that story and whatever was calling my name when I was a kid. That's the top scariest things that happened to me.
Did anybody else ever report any more stories of anything at that camp that you know of?
Because my grandma owned the camp, I was there every summer. And there was like the fourth year I was there when I was like around, I would say, yeah, 12. I heard one of the camp leaders telling stories about, because he's been there a lot, that he's been hearing his name, but he never saw something. He only said that he heard his name being called out. I don't know if, because he's the camp leader, and the story about the hideous kid in the basement, that's like the camp leader scary story. It's always the camp leaders who tells that scary story. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if it was him like flaming on the old scary story about the place, or if he actually had been hearing his name from the forest.
I don't know if I'd want to hear my name called or not. It seems like I would, but then if it happened, I might change my mind.
I've always liked, well, maybe it was like someone trying to play a prank on me. But then again, like, how would they know that it was just me that were awake? And like, because I was just lying there trying to fall asleep in my sleeping bag. And how would they know that I was actually awake? Everyone was sleeping except me, because I don't know. And so it's super creepy. And I was like 8 or 9, so... it's a wonder that I didn't, like, pee the sleeping bag.
Sure, yeah. Christopher, thanks for talking with us. I would love to have you back on.
So, oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Again, thanks for coming on, and we will talk to you later.
Thanks for having me. Great, yeah.
So... after I edited Christopher's interview, I opened this book of Scandinavian folklore I have. It's called Vasen, and it's by Johan Egerkrans, and I'm sorry if I pronounced that wrong. And I was looking up the Skogsra in the book, and there's something really interesting in it. If you recall the story he told about the couple that lived in the house at his grandmother's camp in the 1800s who couldn't have a child. There's a paragraph in this book, Vasen, in the Gokstra section, and it says, "Any man who has a relationship with a woodwife will find it hard to free himself, and trying to break away can be dangerous. The sprite can ruin the man with her magical powers, and if he is a huntsman, he would do well to change his job. She can even drive him mad or make him seriously ill, and if worse comes to worse, he will die under mysterious circumstances. If, on the other hand, the man stays with the woodwife, he can live in relative prosperity and be successful in all his ventures. Some have a child with the woodwife, and these children are said to be bigger and stronger and have a larger appetite than other people.
Well,
yeah, so it's kind of... I looked that up, and I thought... I wish I would have read it before the interview, so I could have brought that up, but I thought that was really, really interesting. They described that kid that the old couple had as being, you know, kind of ugly and big and had this, you know, this voracious appetite. And then the children of the woodwife, that if that's what he saw, are supposedly described similarly, if not the same. So that's pretty wild. By the way, that book, Vasin, fantastically illustrated. You know, I'm an illustrator myself, and it's just incredible. The art in that's really amazing. Very much recommended. I just want to remind everybody, if you want to help Strange Familiars, the best way to do it is to be a patron. You can go to patreon.com/strangefamiliars. $3 a month gets you bonus content. I think we're going to have 2 patron shows up this month. We're going to try moving to that model, I think, in the future. I'm not promising it, but I think we're going to try to do 2 patron shows every month from now on. So we would do 2 regular shows for everybody and 2 patron shows as well. Don't hold me to that, but I think that's the way we're moving. And there's all kinds of levels of support there at Patreon if you want to look. Things like books and stickers and pins and so forth. That's patreon.com/strangefamiliars. Without patrons, no Strange Familiars. That's the only support we get. We don't do advertising at this time. We don't get any kind of funding or anything. So thank you, patrons. Without patrons, no Strange Familiars. And thanks, everybody, for listening. If you can't afford to become a patron, you can always leave us a good rating and review on iTunes or Stitcher or wherever you listen to Strange Familiars. So James was returning to Pennsylvania from Canada, right? This happened on your return trip?
Yeah, this was actually, we're recording on Monday the 20th, I believe. I was returning from Canada on Friday, just past Friday. I was driving back down from Canada, back into South Central. You'll see the underbelly of South Central Pennsylvania.
So this was a daytime sighting, completely, 100%.
Yeah. So strangely enough, you know, most of the time the way that I do this is I'll drive up to Canada during the daytime. So I'm getting to Canada at an earlier time of the day and squeezing an extra day of visitation out, right? So I usually go up early on my arrival day. And then usually on my way back, I usually drive at night, right, under the cover of darkness, right? Less people on the road, et cetera. So this time I did it differently, and I actually was coming back. So I went up in the morning, and I also was coming back down into Pennsylvania in the morning as well on Friday. So it was the first time that I was making the trip back during the daytime. So it was really interesting because it was like seeing everything in the daytime that I don't normally get to see so thoroughly when I'm generally coming back because of it being nighttime, right?
Right.
I've taken the trip back and forth quite a bit over the last 6 or 7 months, and I gotta tell you, you know, every time I'm driving up through there, as soon as you get into like upstate PA and you start getting into the mountains and heading into like rural New York, just like a lot of the listeners probably taking a trip like that through those rural parts, you know, kind of if you have interest in this sort of thing, it definitely sends your imagination, you know, running a little bit, and you start wondering if you're going to see anything. Like, am I going to see a road? Am I going to have a roadside crossing this time? You know what I mean? Like, you're wondering about that kind of stuff, and you're like ultra vigilant, looking around, trying to be observant of the environment. But at nighttime, it's you know, you can't really see so much. So anyway, I had never actually had any experiences driving up or driving back prior to Friday morning, right? So I'm cruising down through, and I would imagine it was probably between 11 and 12, 11 a.m. and 12 p.m. Friday that I was just coming into Mansfield, Pennsylvania. So So coming through, there's still a lot of mountainous areas, a lot of beautiful nature and stuff. And before you get to the Little League Hall of Fame, right, which is also in Mansfield, you know, up further. So I'm on the highway that kind of cuts through this beautiful area. I'm heading towards the Little League Hall of Fame, moving my way through through what's left of the beautiful mountainous area. As I'm coming through, I'm kind of like, you know, looking off and just kind of like in awe of the stuff that I'm seeing, because I'm seeing it for the first time, right? Because I'm divided from where I would be going towards. So I'm seeing completely different things on this side on the trip back than I would see coming to Canada.
Yeah, the highway up there kind of splits. And
Yeah, it does. So I'm seeing some new stuff, and I'm seeing it, you know, very, very, very freshly for the first time. And I'm cruising through, and I look down over the embankment down into this little ravine, and there's all this green foliage kind of coming up off the ground, lots of shrubs and other assorted greenery. And I would say most of it kind of like being in the like 5 or 6 foot high sort of height. But like what brought my attention to looking into this area was there's an oddly colored object like in the middle of this field of green. And it was a more bright, like almost like a neon green with a little bit of a yellow tinge to it, with like also sort of moss like qualities. And I see it, and I actually slowed down because I needed to make sure that my eyes weren't playing tricks on me. And this is broad daylight. I'm looking at this strangely colored object that seems to be not in the right place. You know, at first glance, maybe you might mistake it or just pass it off as like a tree growing in the middle of an area where the tree is a completely different color than everything else. But this wasn't what I saw. What I saw was moving. It was working its way through these trees, through these shrubs and bushes that are kind of like a blanket of the area. And it was moving, like it had a trail, a very clear sort of trail behind it as it had moved through this area. And it wasn't moving very quickly, but it was moving through it. And with what I saw above this blanket of green, I would say that what I was looking at was probably easily at least 6, maybe 7 foot tall, maybe taller. I'm just basing that off what I imagine that the growth on the forest floor had been up to, you know,
right.
just kind of estimating like what that was, how high that was. But something was very clearly moving its way through the screen. So it was like like this bizarrely colored flash of green moving its way through a very natural sea of green, where everything seemed sort of harmonious except for this thing that was sort of cutting through, making this trail, right? And it was definitely moving towards a water source, whatever it was that was moving through. So either I saw my first moving tree, my first migrating tree that just wanted to get closer to the water, or I saw something else. I don't really know what to make of it. You know, it's not exactly what I expected my first sighting of my own to be like, right? But like,
right.
I'm not exactly sure what I saw. You know, I'm not exactly sure what it was that I saw moving through those trees.
Was it upright? You know, like on, did it seem like it was on two legs?
Yeah.
Upright.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you have to, you know, consider that people, like we need to make sense of things, and our minds go into this anthropomorphizing sort of place with everything. That's why we see faces in the clouds and so on and so forth, and we, you know, give characteristics to our pets, and you know, we have your voices we have in our minds of like what our animals would sound like if they could only speak, right? And I don't know if it was that or if it really was just what I was seeing. It looked to me like shoulders and a head, you know, covered in like almost looked like a very, very organic looking ghillie suit, but like on a really big person, right?
So that's what I was going to ask next.
Through.
somebody's going to say it was a ghillie suit. You know what I mean?
Well, then if it was someone wearing a ghillie, I have no idea why someone would be wearing a ghillie suit trucking their way through that area. That it's the middle of nowhere. And there's nothing. There's nothing there.
Rather warm as well.
Well, extremely warm, and also, you know, there were some storms happening as well. I don't think that's what I was seeing. I really don't. Unless there's a basketball player-sized person who would just happen to have been in that specific spot walking around in a ghillie suit for me to see. Like, that just seems...
Right.
I don't know. I don't know. My instincts on what I saw are, you know, not that I saw a person in a ghillie suit.
Sure.
I say ghillie suit because it looked like it. You know, it was a green color, but it wasn't like any kind of green that I've ever seen in a ghillie suit. Ghillie suits generally have more of a forest colors. This was something much more like akin to like different mosses and almost like leaves that had been like fallen from the trees, so they were starting to. There's lots of like yellows mixed into this, like neon greens and yellows.
Yeah, so like much brighter than a ghillie suit would be.
Much, much, much brighter, but it looked like I was watching a moving, like it was a mass. It was like a very solid form moving through this. Through this foliage.
My next question was going to be, did it look solid? Because, you know, I'm sure you've heard people report that, like, that predator-looking thing, you know, or something, you know, looking like the predator, kind of half-invisible, you know, distorting things as it's walking.
No, this was definitely there. I don't feel that there was really any kind of, like, light manipulation or, you know, it wasn't one of those things where it was an impossible color that just sort of, you know, like, you know, I've heard people talk about this impossibly black, that sort of the light reflects or doesn't reflect off of it in a weird way. Yeah. I've heard those things too. And that's not what I saw. Like when I saw at first glance, it looked like a really thick, heavy bush that didn't belong in this area, but like the bush was moving. It was mobile, moving through this other bit of growth. Very, very strange just to look down there and see that. This is an area where the speed limit is like 70 miles an hour. You know what I mean? In this particular area, there's nowhere for people to pull off and do anything. I mean, it's, you know, there's no police out there. That's why the speed limit's so high, because it's like, you know, you might as well make the speed limit this high because of what people are going to do. You know, it's just, you know, it's in almost like a weird gray area, right? Kind of like right before you come back to reality. Right. Before you come back to humanity. To think that there would have been somebody just happened to have been walking around down there, I don't know how likely that would be. I'm not saying that it's impossible that it could have been a person. I'm saying that it seems very unlikely.
Right.
That it could be a person walking around down there. My question would be, like, how did they get there? What vehicle, you know, did they take? I mean, to the best of my knowledge, this main road that cuts through this mountainous area is pretty much your one way through, right? Like everything kind of comes off of this road, right? Unless I just had people living in the woods, you know, then that would be something very different. But yeah, it gave me chills. I mean, I saw it and I just recognized that it was not something that should be there. It didn't seem like it should be there. And then once I realized that it was moving slowly away from me, and I'm looking at what I want to say that I was looking at the back of something, right? It definitely felt like I was looking at like the back of a head and some shoulders that just happened to have been covered in this like little carpet of green and yellows, but they weren't the green and yellows of what was growing in that spot. It was completely, you know, different stuff that I was looking at, but it wasn't just one thing. It was like several different sort of items, it looked like, kind of collected together into this mass.
But isn't it interesting though, with Christopher having described, you know, that whatever entity he saw turning around,
yeah,
and just blending in, you know, it just turned around and blended in. As soon as you told me that, I was like, whoa, how weird is it? I mean, so, you know, maybe not the same thing, probably not the same thing, who knows, but so similar. But, like, where I'm actually editing his episode together, and you call me and tell me this. I'm like, what? And you hadn't heard the interview at that point. You know, it was just like out of nowhere. It was
no. This was just me. I needed to catch up with you and let you know that I did finally see something weird on my way during the journey. It's a six and a half hour drive through upstate Pennsylvania and rural upstate New York, all the way to Buffalo. So I always, I would always joke with people that like, it's only a matter of time before I see something weird, right? And I had my first taste of weird.
So about like how long total did you see this, whatever it was?
Well, the color of this of whatever it was I was looking at is what drew my attention down into the area, because it was very bright, and that's what drew my attention. And as I looked down, I kind of I naturally sort of slowed down. I didn't have anybody else riding on me or anything like that while I was making my 70 mile an hour, maybe faster, way through there. And I slowed down enough so I could get a good look at, try to get a better look at what it was that caught my attention in the first place. I slowed down to, probably slowed down to about 60, 50 miles an hour. And, I was able to look at it for quite a bit because it was pretty open along the side of the road dropping down into that area. And it was very easy to keep focused on the shape as it was moving because of it being such a distinctly different color than everything else that was around it.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say maybe a good 10, 15 seconds probably of solid being able to see it very, very clearly and see what was going on around it before, I would have had to have my head completely turned backwards, right?
Right. And to be clear, this is a one side of a divided, highway. It's not like you could just turn around and go back and look at it.
Exactly. There really isn't a way to do that there. Not that spot.
About how far away was it from the roadside or from the car?
Oh, jeez. I don't know, maybe 40 yards.
Okay, so pretty close, really.
It wasn't very far away from me at all. I could have hopped out of the car and jumped down the route, probably broke my legs jumping down the ravine to try to get to it. But like, it wasn't very far. Maybe 40, 50 yards straight out, but like at a drop, mm-hmm. right? Because what I was looking at, I was looking down on it while it was moving.
Right.
It wasn't on level with me at all. Everything was like kind of down over that embankment, and then it kind of flattened out and it moved towards that stream of water. And I don't know if that stream of water is always there or not. We've had a lot of rain here in Pennsylvania over the last couple of weeks.
Oh,
and
yeah.
There's a lot of water collecting in places that it normally doesn't. So.
Oh yeah.
I don't know. I don't even know if that water would even be there for me to see it, to be able to tell you that this was the spot, right? Again, it was definitely bizarre. Like I kind of like it was like as I was like driving away from it that it kind of like really dawned on me that I just saw something really bizarre, right? Like while I'm looking at it, it's just like what is that? What am I seeing? And then as I got up the road like a couple miles, I'm still thinking about it and like trying to like I guess like make sense of what it was that I just saw happening. But it was no doubt it was moving. There was a distinct path through the foliage that it made while it was moving. It didn't seem like it was moving very quickly. It seemed like it was moving very slowly towards the water. So yeah, I don't know what I saw. I don't know if there are stories. I'm actually interested, have planned for my next afternoon off to do a little research and see if there's any stories from the area. I'd be interested to hear if there's any Grassman sort of sightings, right?
Right. Well, that's what I was going to... There's a couple what they call Green Man things, like entities in Pennsylvania, and one of them was just a dude. I forget why they called him the Green Man. I think he wore a green shirt or something.
What's really interesting about that is, it kind of... ties in with something that my father had told me about when I was a kid about a green thing that he had seen.
Yeah, I was about to get to that. Like we get here and there, and we get these reports of green, hairy things. Which is...
Yeah, and, like, you know, what I wonder about that, what I often wondered about that was, like, you know, are we talking about something that has hair and it has, like, you know, like the way that sloths, like, grow, you know, they have little ecosystems on them, right? They have algae and moss and such things sort of lichen growing on them, right? So I wonder about that. But, like, what I saw, you know, yes, it did have some deeper green elements to it, but for the most part, it was very, very, you know, light green and light yellow green. It just really stuck out against the backdrop of, like, the more normal green sort of colors that you'd expect to see with trees and shrubs and stuff at this time of the year, right? The yellow that I saw seemed more akin to, you know, where the leaves will be probably within the next couple weeks, like starting to sort of yellow out. Like, I've seen a few of those already where leaves have started to already kind of go from that green to that green yellow color.
Yeah, they don't have that deep emerald green of early summer. They start to kind of lose that.
Exactly. Yeah. And this mass that was moving definitely did not have that deep emerald color at all. It definitely had more of a lighter, more fall yellow-green color to it. For sure, yeah. I have no idea what it was I was looking at, but, you know, while I was driving back, I was just, like, thinking, like, I wonder if there are, like, any stories of grass men in this area. I wonder what kind of stuff people in this area have seen, if anybody's reported anything like this before. So it's definitely something I want
to dig in. And then maybe we'll start getting stories about people seeing green men and tree people.
Well, yeah. I would love to hear some stories about that, especially seeing as, you know, my father had seen something here in Pennsylvania when he was younger. That sounds kind of like it's in the same realm as what I experienced and what our guest was kind of talking about, right? Like, it feels like it all sort of ties together and lends itself to that story, right? Like, it's weird how this stuff works. You know, you have an experience or you know, you raise a question, and then, like, somewhere within this world of interesting conversation and topic, it's like something gets thrown back at you, and you're like, wait a second, that's kind of weird that just came up, you know?
Yeah. Oh,
like,
yeah, that happens so, you know, much.
It's like, what did you say? What was that?
Yeah, exactly. Or even just stumbling across something in a book, it's like, well, wait a minute, what? Okay, you know. Well, like I said, hopefully people will contact us with similar. You know, we got 30 some accounts of Flannel Man, maybe more at this point. Coming in, so maybe we'll get some Green Man reports or some tree people or. We don't know what we're calling this, but whatever it is, maybe we'll get some more accounts of it, because that's...
Well, I would definitely be curious to hear if there's anything from that area, from that, like, upstate Pennsylvania, upstate New York area, if people have experienced things such as what I experienced, right?
Right.
Or, yeah, absolutely. And, again, you know, throwing it out there, I generally cross up into Canada at least once a month. If anybody would like to meet up at some point while I'm making my journey and sit down and go on the record and have a talk, or not go on the record and have a talk, you know, I would definitely be interested in meeting up and having those conversations, so long as it doesn't blow me too far off course, right, from where I'm heading. So.
Yeah. Also, if they want to take you any place to show you anything, like. Haunted spots or areas of interest.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I do this like at least once a month. So, yeah, I would definitely be interested in meeting up, especially if, you know, it's like if it's people who are listening to the show and stuff. It'd be really cool.
Awesome.
To meet some of you and your green people stories, your valley green giant stories.
Right on.
For sure. I don't know what else is. I don't even know what else to akin it to. It's so bizarre.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean.
Like, I don't want to say that it was Bigfoot or anything like that. I don't want to cry Bigfoot, right? But, like, I don't know what that is. If it's something completely different, or or if it's in that sort of faction, so to speak. I don't know.
Right. Well, like I said, we definitely get reports of green hairy things that we assume are Bigfoot, you know.
Right.
Because the other, you know, but for the green hair, it seems like people are talking about Bigfoot, but who knows?
Mm.
It's a we'll call it the Green Man for now, and hope we get some more reports.
Yeah.
All right, James.
For sure.
We'll talk to you again soon. Strange Familiars is a production of Dark Holler Arts, music, books, art, podcasts, and more. DarkHollerArts.com. If you're on Facebook, check out the Strange Familiars Gathering group. You can like Strange Familiars page, but we also have the Strange Familiars Gathering group, which you can join and share articles and pictures and anything. It's a pretty fun group, and it's growing every day. So that's Strange Familiars Gathering on Facebook. Intro and background music is by Stone Breath. Stonebreath.bandcamp.com for more.
Thank you. deserts comes with songs of God. Locusts swarm on crop and sod, and candles drip their wax on sand. With flames by black wings fanned, and just beyond the candles damp, the shadows held in flickering trance, a subtle glow, a stranger sight. The lantern of the greening light. See the lights are drifting. See the lights are floating on. See the lights are changing right before